This show is brought to you by Safety FM. Welcome to Safety FM's virtual town hall.
Here is our moderator for the event, the host of the Jay Allen Show and rated R Safety Show and creator of Safety FM,
Dr. Jay Allen.
Well, hello and welcome to this first town hall meeting ever being put on by Safety FM. I do appreciate you coming out here and taking a look at what we have going on today. Immediately, I want to just jump in, have some conversations on what is going on in the world today. A lot of people had contacted me once things started moving and going about, and I wanted to jump in as soon as possible and bring some of the hosts on from Safety FM to have a conversation with us in these interesting times that we are going through. So I don't want to take up too much of your time, and let's kind of get you started here, and let's get our first host onto the stage.
Please welcome the nationally known speaker and host of the Essential Leadership Cycle podcast, Rob Fisher.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Rob Fisher. I own a company called Fisher Improvement Technologies, and we've spent about the last 30 years helping organizations and individuals understand how and why people make mistakes, especially mistakes that could prove to be catastrophic, and how you can do one of three things with those: how you can prevent the mistake, which sometimes you can do, how you can mitigate the consequences when you can't prevent it, or how you reduce the probability to some acceptable risk. Well, folks, welcome to Safety Differently. Ready or not, we've been using things like human performance and what then became human and organizational performance and advanced error reduction to do safety differently for several decades, really. But here we all are having to do safety differently. You know, our world has changed in the last few weeks, especially in Europe and now moving into the U.S. But it's up to us as safety professionals and practitioners to be and become highly reliable in our support for the field. Our capacity will be tested. So will our resilience. As safety leaders, we have to lead during this new time with intentionality. Let's remember that a lot of the high-risk tasks aren't being removed. So we may be working remotely, and we may be providing remote support, but we have to be prepared to support the people that are doing the tasks that have risks, even if that is remote, and even if it changes the way we've done that in the past. So we should be using everything we've learned over the last 30 years about prevention and mitigation, about capacity and resilience, to help those people that are still out there working at risk. Some of the things they're dealing with come in the form of the known error traps. Just imagine the stress and the workload and the height and the time pressure that are on the folks in the field that are trying to keep our lights on, that are trying to keep us manufacturers, that are trying to keep the goods flowing in warehouses and in trucks and in trains. Those folks are now being subjected to what we've known as the error traps or an increase in vulnerability forever. We have to understand those so that we can give good, timely, accurate information to people to help them reduce those vulnerabilities. If you think about the traps of poor communication or vague or poor written guidance and overconfidence, first time or infrequent tasks, are we helping them by providing and paying attention to the triggers that tell them they're at risk? And that could be a risk for an error rate as high as 50%. What about distractions and first day back and extended shifts? Are we compensating in our processes to help reduce the impact of these traps? Are we understanding that perhaps some of our rules may get in the way of safe performance during these times? If you think about the trap of distractions, you know, a lot of organizations have very strict rules about mobile device use on tasks. But if we've got somebody that is doing a first-time or infrequent task because someone else has been sequestered or quarantined, and that individual needs some information, we have to provide that help chain remotely now. They can't come to the field. Why would we not want the workers to be able to FaceTime a subject matter expert or a safety professional? Why would we not want the opportunity and ability to have someone available remotely, that that help chain needs to be more accessible now than ever. And really, they probably can be, because it's not like we're tied up in meetings and other things at the office. So we need to make sure that as safety professionals, we're using the current system to make sure that we're available, even when we may not be able to go out in the field and be there personally. Certainly, we want to do that and go out and engage when we can, but safety is being done differently. Are we making sure that we provide people some of the more technological tools? There's a free app out there for pre-task briefing. It's called Illumi Task Ready, and it asks the right questions for a two-minute drill. But because it's done on a mobile device, maybe it gets sent to a supervisor that can't be with that crew that's doing a new to the task or has somebody new to the job, that helps identify the risks. So you can push a button and email that briefing to a peer or a first line supervisor or a subject matter expert and just get a second check before the task goes on. Because again, for us, we're changing in the way we have to operate as safety professionals, but the high-risk tasks that are happening in the field are what is keeping, at least in the United States, are what is keeping our country running. Are we ensured that people are enabled to stop work and seek out help instead of just encouraged to do it? Have we given them the tools to identify for themselves when they are at risk so that they can self-identify the vulnerability and then give them the tools to be comfortable stopping and seeking out help? How do I do that? Who is available? How do I get a hold of them? Now, look, I really get it. I'm an ex-field operator, and I would kind of feel out there on my own during this time. That can be a good thing or a bad thing. There's probably even some resentment that others are working from home when the field worker has to be out there conducting critical tasks. And they're as worried about their family as we are about ours. All of these things can be distractions. And as safety professionals, we need to help wherever and whenever we can to make it easier for them to create safety. I mean, safety is what we do. It's not an outcome. That's old safety, is worrying about the outcomes. We need to use things like the WIF model. Understanding the work environment, individual capabilities, task demands, and human nature to make sure that people focus on some of the more important attributes. But the two that are impacting people the most out there now is a match between the individual capabilities, what with people being new to the task or coming back after 14 days or the first time task, and the task demands. And those task demands may be shifting by the minute, by the hour, by the day. So the organization has to ensure that slowing people down to produce a safer environment or condition is imperative. And again, the supervisor, the manager may not be able to be out there depending on the requirements for sequestering to make sure that that happens. So we need to make sure that we're more available. You know, those critical elements of safety, creating and managing effective defenses, reducing the probability that an error drives a bad outcome, or mitigating the consequences and minimizing the consequences if something happens, they're a big challenge in our current situation. And we may not have the time or organizational capacity to create and manage as effective a defenses as we did even 2 weeks ago. So we better make sure that our folks have the knowledge, the techniques, and the tools to reduce probability and consequence. Also, in pertaining a lot more to what's going on now, is some ways that we need to think organizationally and individually about application of rules and standards. You know, there's a lot of information out there on reducing rules, but some of our rules were written in a way that the lessons we've learned in the past are encapsulated in the rule, but they have to be followable. So there's a model out there that can be fairly predictive about whether a rule is followable. It's called deviation potential. It says that the probability somebody's going to deviate from a rule that could produce a potentially bad outcome is directly proportional to the difficulty of that rule and inversely proportional to someone's perception of the risk associated with the task and the potential somebody's going to see us. Well, if you think about that in the current situation that we're in, I got to tell you, it sequestering or staying home or working remotely isn't very difficult, but some of the rules that we have to follow related to cybersecurity are mentally difficult. They're hard to remember when they're not right there in front of you in the office. But also think about how we've been disserviced in displaying the perception of risk. Now, I think our country has a better perception of the risk associated with what's going on with the coronavirus now than we had a few weeks ago. And people are now starting to respond to that. But think about the fact that for weeks, we told people that young people were going to be okay. And we didn't know that. So we have to make sure that as safety professionals, we express risk in a way that people get it, that they can match their perception of risk with the real risk. Because not only has work as imagined changed, work as done has changed. And so as safety professionals, we need to change the way we help people do safety, because in the end, it's harder for us to help them remove the risk remotely. So I hope that's what people were looking at. It's some of the things that we're focusing on here at Fisher Improvement Technology and ways that we can get information to people in real time. And I'm going to turn it back over to Jay.
Well, thank you, Rob. I really do appreciate the information. Now, I want to let everybody know, here's what we have going on. We are actually coming across on twitch.tv if you're watching the video broadcast version. Of course, on YouTube. We're also doing the Facebook groups and on some limitations on LinkedIn as well. We're also going to be available on safetyfm.com, safetyfm.live, and the different apps. Now, what I'm asking for people to do is to go to safetyfm.com if they have questions, and we will take those questions at the end, towards the end of the event. That way, we can actually have the whole panel of hosts answer the questions as they come about. So let's get ready to move on and go into our next host coming up.
Please welcome the host of the X Factor of Safety, Pedro Maciel.
Welcome, everybody. Hope everybody's having a wonderful day. This is a great, great time to be around and to understand that fear is not an option when it comes to fighting this global pandemic and epidemic, especially those that have children. You know, as we move forward and understand the actual outcome of what's to come about, having the children brave by your side while you too being brave, it will definitely help all the adversity that's going on in the world. You know, I'm in Georgia, and some of the facts that are happening here locally, you know, we have 287 confirmed cases in the state of Georgia alone. And it's, you know, it's a pretty scary thought, especially when, you know, the kids are watching the news and seeing what is going on out there in the world. But rest assured, keeping them safe is the priority, because they are the future. They are the ones that will be, you know, here way past us adults and us safety professionals. And some of them might end up going into the safety profession. So, my message to families that have small children, make them aware of what is going on, but don't let them be afraid of what's going on. Make them understand that washing their hands is a normal act in life. It happens. It's what you have to do to stay clean, to prevent spread of infection. Also, if they start to feel sick, to let you know right away. That definitely becomes one of the major issues of the spread of the virus, is not knowing when you are sick or when you're not sick and being around people. Self-quarantining yourself and quarantining as across the states is definitely playing a big part to, you know, bringing down that curve and flatlining. It's not happening quickly enough for some of us, but we definitely know that it is on a decline. With some of the quarantine that's going on. As a safety professional in the construction field, you definitely have to make sure you adhere to some of the, you know, the federal guidelines that they put in place, the CDC has put in place with keeping your workers safe. You know, any private sector employee and employer should be abiding by those rules as well, just to make sure everybody is safe and sound. Hand sanitizer, you know, the cleanliness of the hands, the cleaning down of common touch tools, those types of things will definitely help prevent the spread of this infection. Also, I know some, you know, the workers and workforces out there are having a hard time coming by water and hand sanitizer. So one of the resources out there, distilleries are now making hand sanitizer. So get with your local distilleries and get that hand sanitizer, and they're handing it out for free. All you have to do is bring a container to be able to put the hand sanitizer in, and they're doing that to help the community while these shortages are happening across the country. You know, having kids myself, teenagers at that, they don't want to listen to anything that we're saying. But on the same note, we definitely have to make sure that they are made aware and not always listening to what's going on social media. There's a lot of false information that happens out there. So same thing goes with the workforce. Any false accusations or false media that they're getting, they should be coming to a reliable source, looking at the CDC website, looking at the federal websites and the local government websites that have been put into place to get that information across, and then relaying that to their workers. And, you know, if you have people that speak Spanish and don't kind of understand at your job site, you can always find an interpreter. They have all the resources available in Spanish and other different languages, so that way that barrier, that communication barrier, is never an issue, because we want to make sure that those individuals are safe as well. You know, one of the things I want to add here in Georgia, the governor is definitely putting, you know, good use to the resources. There is an Air Force base where, you know, confirmed cases have been placed, and definitely using all the resources to help facilitate any new cases. There has been a total of 1,800 tests that have been issued. So again, the testing, the drive-up testing facilities, if you don't have to go to a drive-up testing facility, if it, you know, call your doctor first and see what is going on. If it's a mild allergy reaction, if it's just a common cold. And then once you get to that severe state, then I suggest going to one of those testing facilities, or, you know, possibly the hospital. But we want to minimize as much time out and about, as well as saving those resources for the individuals and those confirmed cases that we end up getting. If you have, and some of the precautions you take on a construction site and what you end up having on a construction site, and anybody that seems sick, anybody that shows signs of being sick, just go ahead and you know, tell them to self-quarantine, send them home, because you know they're going to be around everybody else. They might sneeze, they might cough. They're going to come in contact with tooling, machinery, and clean up after those people. If they find out middle day that they are sick, they will end up, you know, infecting somebody else. So just make sure that you're taking those precautions on a construction site. It's very hard to keep a construction site sanitized because it's sometimes such a dirty place, but in this time, you know, time and age, and what we're going through right now as a country and a nation, we definitely have to have that mindset of being able to disinfect and being able to keep clean and keep, you know, people self-quarantined so the spread does not continue to happen. You know, with that being said, again, all those that have children, make them aware. That is my biggest take. And what I want to pitch out there is make sure they are aware of what's going on. Keep a close eye on them, because they are, young people are not immune to the coronavirus. They have a less chance of being infected, but they could still get infected and then cause troubles for older generations. So just be mindful of that and make sure
Pedro, thank you for the time, Pedro. Really do appreciate it. Thank you for actually sharing your messaging here. Also, wanted to also point out that this is actually Pedro's first week on Safety FM. So this is definitely some interesting times for this to actually be going on. But I do appreciate the message. Hopefully, we'll have some questions towards the end that you'll be able to answer. Thank you for what you're saying.
Please welcome the nerd, the hope nerd, Samuel Goodman.
Hello, howdy, hi, everybody. Sam Goodman, the Hop Nerd. I'm happy to be here. Let me start by sharing with what I'm seeing a little bit locally here in my neck of the woods and with some of the organizations that I interact with. Most of the organizations that I'm involved with, I'm seeing some pretty smart things out there. From most, maybe not all, but from the vast majority of them. I'm seeing non-essential folks being directed to work at home, which seems like a pretty great idea. I'm one of those non-essential folks right now. So for me personally, I'm distanced. I'm working from home. The show must go on, though, right? The work must go on. So most of my stuff I'm accomplishing through Zoom, Skype, FaceTime, all that kind of sort of stuff. For those folks that are essential, we have processes and things. I'm mostly involved with utilities and power generation. So there are folks that have to remain there. For those folks that have to stay, I'm seeing those folks being socially distanced in place. Some of the practices that I'm seeing are maintaining 6-foot distance from each other, no sharing of work areas, equipment. It gets pretty interesting when you get in the control room of a power plant trying to keep folks 6 foot away from each other, but they're making it work. And in our larger facilities around elevators, I'm seeing people being limited to the amount of folks that can ride in elevators, sometimes one, maybe two maxed. I'm also seeing increased sanitization processes happening hourly, sometimes every half an hour. One thing that I'm seeing starting to manifest here more recently is symptom checks, temp checks upon entry. We're in the midst, or at least some of the folks that I'm involved with, we're in the midst of some outage season. So we have tons of contractors that are still arriving onto sites. We have tons of essential personnel that are still arriving to sites. So as we're doing that part of their way in every single day, they go through a symptom check station. They go through a temp check station, which is pretty interesting. My significant other works in healthcare, and they're doing the same thing at their facilities. As providers arrive to work, they're basically checking temperatures. And if they exceed a certain point, then they're being directed to go home and not come back until that temperature lowers. Locally, I'm in the downtown Phoenix area. Locally, what I'm seeing is I'm seeing a lot of great things actually from local and state government. They're really stepping up to support local businesses and citizens. The areas in which I'm really proud, I mean, I'm seeing a lot of stuff from local companies. They're doing some really cool things. Restaurants are remaining open. They're kind of going to drive-through only, pickup only. DoorDash is doing doorbell ditching right now, to where you order your food, they'll drop it on your doorstep, ring your door, and run away. But it works, right? The one thing that I'm seeing is I'm seeing a lot of panic in our local grocery stores. Shelves are getting a little bit bare. So it's pretty interesting to see some of that panic start to manifest. Local grocers are actually starting to counter that by offering certain shopping hours to more vulnerable citizens. So from about 5 a.m. to about 9 a.m., most of our local grocers are only opening to folks that are 65 years old and above, to allow them to get first pick at the things that they need. So I thought that was pretty cool, and I wanted to share that. For me, what I'm seeing out there is I'm seeing a lot of polarization, though. I'm seeing folks some that are extremely optimistic and some that are not so much. And the message that I really wanted to share here is that I really believe that it's a time for balance. Too much optimism while diminishing the threat is going to risk more lives. Too much panic is going to risk more lives. So I think we need to find balance. And I think we help to promote that balance as safety professionals by driving people to valid and real information. I know that's been said a couple times, but there's a lot of misinformation out there. So I think we need to continue to direct people to valid news outlets. We need to continue to direct people to the CDC guidelines. We need to continue to promote the stuff that actually works. We know that social distancing works. We need to continue to drive that. We need to drive those solid sanitization practices. With that being said, though, it's a time for helping, not hiding. We need to make sure that we are reaching out. We need to be encouraging other folks to reach out to the communities, to their neighbors, to their families, to their friends, to make sure that they have the things that they need, to make sure that we can be helping in any way that we can. From our profession, I think we need to act as the calming effect during this kind of storm that's going on. Again, I think we need to drive folks to balanced and valid information. I think we need to continue to drive preparedness, not panic. And we really need to be helping each other and not hiding. And that's really all I've got. Back to you, Jay.
Well, I really do appreciate that, Sam. I think that you covered some great information there. And definitely when we get towards the end here, I would really like to have some more information on what's going on with how you were saying with your significant other in the healthcare process and how they're really going into some of that detail. But I really do appreciate your sharing. So let's go ahead and move forward and go into our next host.
Please welcome the host of the Safety Consultant Podcast, Sheldon Primus.
Hey, welcome everybody. Thank you so much for this time that you've given me. And I'm really excited about this town hall. So I'm going to break up my time into three different ways, if you will. So the three different ways that I am going to break up my time is I'm going to first talk about being a plant super for the utility sector, and then what we used to do with business continuity. And then the second thing I'm going to really worry about is like the EH&S component to what we're dealing with the COVID-19. And then the third is just my plan as the family plan itself. So when I first got started, I've been actually in the wastewater field, so liquid utilities. Everyone's got to flush, right? You got to make sure that you can flush and you could get that utility side going. So we always had business continuity plans. We've always had plans for pandemics. So your utility is going to be okay. But first, let me let you know that if they're run well. So usually what we had to do, we had to break away from some things that was like just-in-time product ordering. Couldn't do that because for us, if there is a breakdown and a lift station is about to back up into a street, you have to have another pump ready. You have to have another system ready. So lean management might be something that you might have to start talking about when you are addressing pandemic preparedness in the future. Cross-training is another one. You might have to start thinking about cross-training, and when you do that, you're going to have to step on some people's toes in between, you know, this department and that department. You know, it's like the Crips and the Bloods with these different departments, right? So you're going to really have to start dealing with that and the union contracts and things like that. So business continuity is corporate culture, but corporate culture, if done right, is safety culture. So if these things are happening together and the corporate mindset is going to be, let's work on things where we're not going to be stressed out because we've had a plan in place. Stress, as we know, will also affect the environmental safety and health of your workers. And then you're going to see more issues that will happen because of that. The organization itself becomes dysfunctional. So with that dysfunction, then truly you're going to have a situation where you're going to lose sight of how you're going to protect everybody and basics. And the EH&S basics is hazard controls, right? That's our basics. So we already know the COVID-19 is our hazards. Our controls are going to be engineering, admin, PPE. So we're always dealing with the PPE, and you'll have to teach your workers how to use the PPE right, but you're going to have to think of transmission. So if you could really, really help people do a touch and a contact profile of what they touch, how they deal with touching their faces, everything else, that's going to help them on the EH&S side. But you know, truly, you're going to have to really go back to basics on that one. And that leads me to my plan as a family. We're truly going to look at some of those things. I'm a caregiver, and, you know, my caregiver that my wife and I are doing is in that high area where if she becomes infected, we'll really have to look out for that. So we are doing the isolation like we're hearing, the social distances. I'm going to add some gloves in that, too. Because PPE, again, if I'm looking at my contact and my touch profile, and if I'm truly out in the open and you're going to grab that pen to sign for your ATM card and you're going to, you know, pass that card to someone else and everything else that we touch, then that's a point of contact, a point of entry. And switching my business, I'm doing a lot of online courses like I have before, written programs. But the true part and the true nature of what I'm currently doing, and my family as well. My wife and I have been doing this for a long time. We've just started to breathe even more, started to meditate. And I shouldn't say start, I've been meditating for a while, but been doing that for a while, and it's truly helping. And Some of businesses are already getting into this before, and we've seen that. So I really believe if we get perspective through that, we'll all make it through this time. Pandemics, unfortunately, may not ever go away, but preparedness will make it easy for you. So if you have any comments, any questions, any of those things, just please go ahead and put that in where Jay tells you to log that in, and we'll be here to help you out with this portion of our time. So stay well, and I will talk to you guys later.
Sheldon, thank you very much for sharing. And like Sheldon just said, if you do have some questions or things that you'd like to share, please go to safetyfm.com. We do have a bot right there where you can actually enter in the information. Also, we are capturing some of the information on some of the streaming platforms. Now, I will tell you, for some reason, we do tend to run into some issues from time to time on the Facebook side of it. If you put a comment there, so there's probably a good possibility that we will not catch it from there. So if you do go to that bot on safetyfm.com, we'll be able to assist you. Let's go to our next presenter, please.
Here is a message from our in-house safety pro, Blaine J. Hoffman.
Hey, Jay. Hey, everybody that's on the town hall. Sorry I could not make it to the live town hall meeting, but I talked with Jay, and he has graciously allowed me to record a message for you. I am practicing a little social distancing right now in the Smoky Mountains, the Great Smoky Mountains. Nobody around. We got the camper packed full of supplies. We have our own restroom facilities on the camper and everything. And so we're far away from most people. It was a good time to just take a break from everything. So I wanted to kind of just bring something up that's been on my mind as it pertains to the workplace. First, go to the cdc.gov website for the COVID-19 updates, and there is a tab for employer resources, interim guidance for employers, and make sure you review those. But as I sit here, I want to share with you about an opportunity that we don't want to miss. It's hard to think of things that are going on right now like this and think of innovative opportunities and ideas, but that's what we need to do as safety pros. So take this opportunity to be innovative and think of alternative ways that we can engage people other than face-to-face. It's an opportunity for us to strengthen those outreach efforts as well during these times. Things like training, you know, alternative ways of reaching associates and employees, meetings, toolbox talks, stretching, you know, self-guided stretching is a good thing to do now because you don't want people huddling in large groups. You want to make sure they have sufficient space between them. Again, we keep hearing, 6 feet or more. And so that could be difficult in some workplace settings. So self-guided stretching, limiting meetings. But yeah, as safety professionals, we still need to be able to communicate. And we obviously, we're people, right? That old phrase. We still want to engage with workers. So think of this as an opportunity to be innovative and creative and make good use of technology, obviously. But, you know, that's what's going to be tough. Other things employers can do is staggering start and stop times if possible so that you don't have large amounts of workers coming into a building at one time. Staggering breaks and lunches. Make sure that your cafeteria facilities are, you know, removing some chairs to prevent people from sitting together in large groups. Things like that, but just get creative and stay vigilant. I wish I could, I'm going to see the recording of the town hall, but I wish I could be joining you live. But I just wanted to share sort of, you know, my two cents on what I'm going through right now and the way I'm looking at it. The lens that I'm looking through is, okay, it's an opportunity to be innovative and to create new channels of communication and new ways to reach people and stay ahead of everything. But, you know, just stay vigilant, as I said, and I love you all your safety pros, so keep doing what you do. Thanks.
So truly do appreciate Blaine J. Hoffman taking the time to actually send a message in, even though he was unable to make it. So let's continue on with our next guest.
Please welcome the host of Insight into Your Safety Culture, Dr. Tim Ludwig.
Hey, everybody out there in Safety FM land. I know there's an international audience, so I know this COVID virus is impacting us all around the world and gives us an opportunity to come together as a world community. you know, what a difference a week makes. Oh my gosh. I mean, many of, if you're like me, many of us went to like fully optimized or maybe even over optimized lives full of activity and stress. And just in a week, now we have sequestered lives, kind of devoid of activity and actually still full of stress, you know, with this, I guess, silent army of virus just waiting outside our doors. You know, so nowadays we're into, you know, just, we get all this, these instructions on how to stay healthy and probably more to the point, how to keep our society healthy to deal with this crisis. You know, many of the instructions out there are to literally do nothing. Yeah, we're to stay at home. We're to not gather in groups. And frankly, to me, and probably to you guys out there, it's a bit maddening. You know, the reason it's maddening is that we're humans. We're animals. We're active creatures. We're built, our bodies are built to act on our environment. We have brain systems, the limbic system and otherwise, that they're there to help us adapt to our environment so our actions are more successful. We are not passive creatures until, you know, the end of the day when we plop in front of Netflix and become couch potatoes. Well, and in fact, you know, when our bodies are passive, it starts breaking down. And I bet a lot of you out there are feeling the same way if you've been at home for a while and you haven't exercised. This is the central premise of behavioral science. I'm a scientist. I work at a university here in North Carolina, United States. We're calling it Zoom University these days. And behavioral science teaches us that behavior is an active phenomenon. It's not passive. In fact, we call this the dead person test. Although in our woke age, we should name it the dead person test. And the test is, if a dead person can do it, then it's not a behavior because dead people can't behave. So we need to be active. We need to be active in this crisis. You know, as this crisis emerges, we're going to experience many heroes among us. There's going to be heroes, certainly our healthcare workers, our scientists, epidemiologists, the leaders among us, podcasters, Jay Allen, everybody is going to do things, some things small, some things big, some things making a difference large in many people's lives, some people just helping people one-on-one. Heck, the social distancing that we're all doing right now is not only to keep ourselves healthy, but it's primarily to kind of keep the sickness at bay, keep it at a management rate so our healthcare facilities can keep up with the critical cases. You know, in some ways, we're all heroes. Now, I work with a major grocery distribution warehouse. It serves about 12 eastern states in the U.S. With about 1,500 employees and another 300 drivers. And you know, as we consider the heroes of this crisis, we may also want to look at the businesses out there that provide the food, the fuel, the staples, and other means for our lives. In the midst of this big scare, I know at least 1,500 folks that are actively going out of their homes and laboring each day to make sure my family and some of yours will have access to food and staples and that precious toilet paper. This grocery distribution company had just welcomed a new president back in the fall, and she's been very actively involved in our behavioral safety teams that we built in the warehouse and in the transportation delivery group. And as this virus started becoming a national emergency, she knew her company would be called upon to do extraordinary things for our community, these 12 states that they operated in. You know, so she emailed me and she told me that it was really interesting. She told me that she considered this event of the virus to be a possible tipping point for her company. She saw it as an opportunity to up their game and visibly show value, you know, to their customers, the grocery stores, and to their customers' customers, which is me, like the consumer. And I agree. In fact, we're counting on grocery distribution warehouses to have our back out there. And so her and I finally got a chance to talk. She was about to broadcast a company-wide video so all her employees could hear the important message about the COVID virus outbreak and the steps the company is going to take. You know, now by this point, all of us have heard, gotten messages from everyone from our employer to airlines, to insurance companies, or shipping services. Heck, I'm getting stuff from my yoga studio and wine club, you know. her message, she told me, would contain a lot of the same caring messages of concern for employees and families and links to information, et cetera. But the behavioral question she had for me was around warehouse security. You know, being one with all the food and toilet paper, they had to secure the facility from outsiders. And her immediate problem was that family members were coming by the warehouse and there were unlocked doors and things like that. And her message was going to be, don't ask your family members to come. Don't leave doors unlocked. And it sounds a lot like the kind of passive rules that we have in our safety systems, right? Don't step in front of the hand truck while it's still moving. So I advised her that people are active. You know, they don't want to sit back and be passive. And this particular set of heroes, we want to be active in the case of our nation's crisis. But it'd be difficult for someone like her in a presidential position to get her arms around the active behaviors that'll make a difference. So I reminded her, and I'm reminding you folks out there, that you have competent leaders and you have empowered safety teams of employees. They're out there on the front line in the best position to articulate the active behaviors that are critically needed. You know, certainly there'll be leaders out there that can make a difference, and we have to make sure that we're taking care of their ideas. Indeed, she could be on the cusp of about 1,500 great ideas for impactful pinpoints for her employees, ideas that one person can't come up with. In fact, when each of her 1,500 employees come up with their ideas, they're going out to her families and going out to the communities where they can influence them. So let's not be passive in the midst of this crisis. Let's go out and figure out how we can be active, an active culture of heroes for our companies and communities. And Jay and the fellow podcasters out there, part of this town hall, I consider you guys heroes too. Thanks, Jay.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ludwig, for actually sharing that information. I think that it's such crucial and valuable information. And as we are aware, you are the only behavior-based safety person that's on here. So I know it gets a little freaky sometimes when we do the mix thing, but I really do appreciate you coming on. Let's go ahead and move on to our next host.
We all need heroes. Please welcome the Safety Justice League.
Hey, it's Abby from the Safety Justice League, and I want to say thank you to all the fellow podcasters here on the town hall today, and also a big thank you to our fellow safety professionals that are listening in. This was week one of who knows how long that things will just be very, very different. And in case no one's told you yet this week, you're doing a great job. And I want you to remember to take care of yourself in all of this too. You're only human, and so are your workers. So communication, even over communication, is key at this time. And I'm so lucky to have the rest of the Safety Justice League to bounce ideas off of. So if you're solo, like a lot of us are safety department of one, we'd love to be your virtual coworkers and support you at this time. And I want the rest of the guys to chime in too, but I just want to echo some things that other podcasters have said, that I hope that safety professionals don't forget their fundamentals at this time. Things like job hazard analysis, risk assessment, worker training are so important, especially as people are starting to take on some new roles and tasks.
Thanks, Abby. Hey, this is Jason Maldonado from the Safety Justice League. And I think, so many great things have been shared already today, and I wanted to sort of carry on with something Sam said about the polarization that's going on. One thing, you know, my industry is one of those critical industries for food production. We got to keep things running so that we can keep people fed. And I have seen the gamut of extremes in my office, you know, people coming in going, what are we going to do? And then other people coming in and saying, you know, this is stupid. This is just a common cold and we shouldn't be worried about it. And I think that's really a shame. And that's what I've taken on as my role in this, is to be that voice of calm. You know, I had a younger guy come up to me last week, just really stressed out. I mean, physically, you could tell, emotionally, you could tell on his face that he was just worried to no end. And he said, what are we going to do? And I said, well, the first thing you got to do is calm down and realize that we're all in this together. We're working toward this thing, toward beating this thing. And we're dealing with it as the information comes. Every day is something new. And I think it's the shame of the whole situation is that we have such a polarization, like Sam said, where you've got the extreme saying this is going to kill everybody, it's the apocalypse. And then you've got the other side saying it's no big deal. And I think the truth is actually in the middle. And that's something that we really need to focus on as safety professionals and be that source of calm. It's almost like a really catastrophic event where you're the first responder. You can't go in there freaking out and adding to the chaos. You have to be somebody who's going to take up the mantle, so to speak, and really be calm, really be professional and act on what we know, what we are trained to do. And I think that a lot of people are doing that. I think a lot of people need to be reminded a little bit. So that's where we come in. And again, you know, reach out to any of us, any of the podcasters here on this show here, and we're willing to help.
You know, I want to jump off of some of the things that both of y'all said. I've been seeing a lot of people that are talking about the heroes that are, you know, rising through this. And it's so true. You've got your doctors, you got your nurses, but, you know, you have your grocery workers, you have your restaurant workers, you have those people that are going out and they are doing what it takes to make sure that people have the things that they need. And I love what a lot of companies are doing with the idea of opening it up for people a little earlier. You know, you've got schools that are opening up, providing meals. I mean, there are so many heroes, but I don't want to step away from the fact that as safety professionals, it's also our job to keep an eye on the things that aren't necessarily coronavirus related, that aren't COVID-19 related. You know, send out a daily safety moment to remind somebody about something that has to do with safety that doesn't relate to coronavirus or COVID-19 or whatever the newest name for it is, because we have to keep people focused on more than just this virus. I understand it's the topic of conversation that everywhere they look, they're having that opportunity to learn more about it. And hopefully we're directing them as safety professionals to quality information, to the right places. But we also need to make sure that they're focusing on the everyday safety. Are they backing safely? Are they checking their tools before they use them? There's so many different things that can potentially come into play that have nothing to do with the virus that can seriously harm our workers. So take just a little bit of time and make sure that you're giving them that information as well.
Hey, everybody, it's Nate Brayman with Safety Justice League, also known as Redbeard. You know, one of the interesting lessons I've learned this week is that I found out my normal lifestyle is apparently called quarantine. Anybody else with me on that?
Yes.
But in all seriousness, the number one most important thing that I want to emphasize is that in order to delay the spread of the virus is by staying at home and utilizing social distancing, as others have already said. Hospitals are going to get overflowed if we don't flatten that curve. And so, you know, I've been observing in the news that there are young people disregarding that advice. But there are also older people, such as company executives, disregarding that advice and requiring employees, ones who are, you know, equipped to work remotely, to come into the that can work remotely, and mandating that they come into the office unnecessarily. So my message is to the young and the old, but with emphasis on the older company executives who are ignoring the risks. So I've boiled it down into five elements and made an acronym so it's easy to remember. I recommend writing down these letters. So L is for listen to experts. Social distancing done best means staying at home. I for imagine everyone is infected. Assume they are and take universal precautions. G for give employees space and trust. And M, don't micromanage. And lastly, A, assume the worst and hope for the best. And I think that by following these five letters, older executives can ensure the best outcomes, but it depends on you.
I really liked Jason Lucas's reminder as well about that there's still operations going on. And while some of us don't work in super essential emergency types of operations, we're still working. And so the same safety stuff applies, whether there's coronavirus or not. And so I want to make sure that our fellow safety professionals remember that as well, that we still have our regular stuff in addition to all this extra stuff. And I just want to make sure people are taking care of themselves, taking that time to maybe rest their brain at some point during the day, because I know there's a lot of frantic communication going on within our workplaces as well, and with each other even too. And that can be taxing and exhausting. So find your outlets within your home.
So I just wanted to jump back to what Nate was saying real quick. What were those letters again, Nate? I was writing down what you were saying. And I wanted to make sure I got it right.
Okay, the first one is L for listen to experts. The next one's I for imagine everyone is infected. G for give employees space and trust. M for don't micromanage. And the last one's A for assume the worst and hope for the best.
No, I like that. I like that a lot, because I think that everything that you're saying is really something that business owners need to be listening to, because I think it's important that they understand that, you know, social distancing, for those that have the ability to do so, they should be doing it.
That's why it's so key right now. Like, we've got this podcasting. We're not even in the same room. It sounds like we're always in the same room, but we're not. So it's nice to have these outlets to maintain the social distancing, but still get the messages out. So maybe within your organization, there might be pathways of communication like this that you can use, whether it's podcasting or recording videos, like you see Jason's social media safety minute, doing stuff like that, recording videos and posting them on your company intranet to help people get through their day, or just short instructables on what they can do each day. But this is the time that safety and risk professionals can really shine with the different ways that we're able to communicate our message.
So there was a question that just came in. I think it was Todd that referenced it in regards, is it spelling out LIGMA?
Yep, that would be the acronym.
Okay. Anything else you guys care to share?
No, thank you so much for the time, Jay. I think this has been an awesome town hall. I'm really looking forward to everybody else who has time to speak.
I really do
appreciate it. Jay, you're a hero in these times. Thank you for this platform.
Well, I appreciate everything that everyone does that's on here. Now, I'm going to tell you, I really appreciate the information, and there are some questions already coming in regards of LIGMA, so we'll go through those there towards the end. Now, I know that most of the people that are on the actual radio station and on our streaming platform are safety professionals, but I actually reached out to a friend of mine to do me a favor, and when I reached out, he is not in the safety profession. And I did ask him to come on and actually tell us what's going on from his perspective in the world that he actually participates in. So here's our next guest.
Please welcome Dustin Anderson from HGTV's Fixer Upper to the Safety FM Town Hall.
Hey, my name is Dustin Anderson. I'm an entrepreneur out of Waco, Texas. I've got a residential and commercial glass shop, so service industry. And then I'm a co-owner of a design company that caters to Division I sports programs. So to say, like most of most businesses out there, that we've been hit by this it's an understatement. A couple things that are really interesting to me right now is I'm seeing a lot of industries pull together. The glass side is pulling together from an industry standpoint, from reaching out to each other, from borrowing supplies to get jobs done while they're able to get jobs done. We've also seen some really cool stuff on sharing how people are pivoting. We've seen contact guards, like a sneeze guard for retail. So we're calling it a contact guard. We've seen some of those things like come out, brainstorming ideas, ways to help your customers as well as your employees. I think those two things go hand in hand. So we're looking at ways to take care of our customers from a standpoint of calling them, making contact, having conversations that impact them, from making sure that they understand that we get this. And if there's something that we can do to make them feel better about being in their house, then we're following those rules and guidelines that they're putting forth. But even more than that, you know, we're talking to our employees and we're asking them questions about, what are you doing? Like, what's going on at home? Is everybody okay? And then we're making sure they're comfortable being at work. And if they are, we're continuing until they ask us to not, from a government standpoint. Or it shuts down. We've got a backlog, so we're able to have work right now, but you know, the phone's not ringing. So it's very scary for everybody. I think we buckle down. I think we stick together in our industries, service industry across the board. Not that there's anything wrong with jumping and using the big guys, but I think it's great to use locally owned and operated when you're looking for something that you need in these service times. And then again, it's just taking care of yourself, you know, being smart. I'm working from home today. I did go in this morning and spend a little time at work, but I'm home this afternoon taking care of emails and, you know, going to all non-essential people working from the house. And I think that's a smart move. Another thing we're doing on the service side, on the glass side, is we're moving to a four-day work week, and we're shifting where employees aren't necessarily having overlapping schedules. And I think that helps. We also have the benefit of not being on top of each other because we're in and out of our office all day. So those are just a couple of things we're doing. If I have any advice for anybody, it's just stay calm. It's not a fire sale. We're going to have to endure. This is definitely a marathon. It's not a quick race. It's going to take some time. It's going to take effort, and you're probably going to have to reach out. You're probably going to have to find others in your industry or others that are like you in a similar business, and you may have to ask questions. You may have to ask for favors, and if you're too proud to do that, well, you may see the repercussions being a lot harder than what they've been in the past. Outside of that, man, keep your head up. I hope all's well, and best of luck to each and every one of you.
So I really do appreciate Dustin Anderson taking the time to do that, because I know that he is also one of the spokespersons for Glass.com. So taking time to do this was very, I appreciated him actually going out to make sure that he could talk to our audience in that particular regards. I'd like to go ahead and move forward and have our next speaker come up.
Welcome to the author of The Pre-Accident Investigation and host of The Pre-Accident Investigation and known speaker, the one, the only, Dr. Todd Conklin.
Hey, everybody. So let me start by saying this. Things that never happen, happen. And I think the biggest challenge we have, and it is a challenge, is that our world changed. And not to put a depressing point on this, but the world we will return back to will not be the same world we left. And that's negative and sad, but it's also positive and it's an opportunity. And that's kind of where we are in this conversation. So I appreciate Ligma. I really like Jason's talk about the glass world. Let me add one more little notion for you. So get out your same sheet of paper and write this down, VUCA, V-U-C-A. Now, VUCA really has to do with, some industries call them black swan events. The world that Rob and I grew up in, we call it a low probability, high consequence event. But VUCA really stands for this idea of variability, volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and adaption. Because what we're really dealing with now in our organizations is that the world that we thought we managed, the world that we built strategies for, the world for which we had plans and path forwards, the world for which we had an understanding of what would happen tomorrow, that changed. And what's weird is that the speed of change is dramatic in a crisis. And you feel this almost minute by minute. But your world is simply a different place. And VUCA really helps you understand at a fundamental level that the normal response to this kind of crisis may not be the right response for your organization. So the tendency is, when something like this happens, is to really withdraw, simplify, and harden the edges. So you pull inward. You no longer look at the complexity of the situation. You look for very simple, quick answers, and you build walls between you and the rest of the world in order to provide security. Those are really good things. There's nothing wrong with those. In fact, we can make a pretty good case from the behavioral standpoint that that's kind of hardwired into being a human being. But the challenge we have is that really those responses are wrong. And I say wrong with the most loving sort of attitude I can say that with. In fact, when you're met with crisis and uncertainty, probably you want to disrupt. So instead of simplifying, really look deeply into the context of the event, because that'll help you. Instead of hardening the edges, increase diversity. So you heard Jason say, if you aren't willing to ask for help, if you aren't humble enough to reach out and get help from other industries, other peers, it'll be a difficult ride. That's exactly right. You want to actually increase diversity. You want to look for, actively seek other opinions and other ideas. So suddenly the 1,500 employees that are running a grocery warehouse, a job that we wouldn't have thought would be essential or high risk, we wouldn't put them in the same category as firefighters and ambulance drivers, but they are. They're in that very same category. That group of experts, the diversity that they represent, that's everything. And so the challenge is to keep your organization constantly micro-testing new ideas and being flexible and adaptive enough to understand that the world is changing, and the idea that worked today may not be the best idea for tomorrow. The biggest challenge we have in the profession is that we're used to having a certain amount of expertise. We know what will happen next. And because we know what will happen next, because we've seen it a million times, our entire history is filled with this expertise building activity. Because we know what will happen next, we can predict what will happen in the future. That anxiety, because that tool has been taken away from us, is really a big part of how we're responding. But I'm not very interested in talking to us about how we respond, because we live in our heads. You know exactly how you feel right now. You know how much anxiety you're carrying. You know how much fear you have. You know how much uncertainty you have. You've got that. What I want to tell you is your job, more than anything, is to help your organization's leaders really build a path forward that takes into account this idea of disruption of ideas, of diversity of opinions, and of the power of restoration. Because the tendency to seek some cause for this horrible event will be super, super, super compelling. But in fact, the question I want you to ask is not who screwed up. That question is not helpful at any level. You hear it, and it's not helpful. The question I want you to ask is, who's been hurt by this? What do they need? And who's in charge of making sure they get it? Your challenge is to manage uncertainty. And you manage uncertainty with certain step-by-step advantages you give your organization. Build diversity, experiment with new ideas, know that tomorrow will be different, and know that uncertainty absolutely requires adaption. And the one thing you're really good at is adapting. Jay, that's pretty much how I would wrap up my part. I'll pass it back over to you if you want it.
Okay, Todd, I really do. I do appreciate it. Now, I'm going to say there's some questions that are coming about, and one of the first ones that I do see on the screen is referencing is how do we actually handle, interacting with people that are suffering from depression that were already depressed prior to this occurring? Anybody like to take a chance at it?
Hey, it's Abby. I can jump in real quick. Yesterday, my employer actually had a meeting with all of us, and one of my coworkers brought up a reminder about our employee assistance program. And so it's a great time, as always, to bring up to workers an employee assistance program and give them instruction on how to access that, and always make sure to reinforce that it's private and that the company, even though they pay for the service, that the company doesn't find out what the worker is calling the EAP about. And then also personally, I'm a huge fan of using online therapy. And so my chosen favorite is Talkspace.com. And so that matches you with a therapist. You can talk, text, or do video chats with them. And I found it to be super helpful.
Thank you, Abby. Is there anybody else? And the question was related to how should people be interacting? Let's do that again. It's pretty much the summarization of it is, what would you do right now with people that are suffering from depression prior to this event occurring and then now interacting with this? Because Todd, I think you were saying something at the same time too, so I apologize. Okay. Next question then.